Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, Managing Director of Buyers Meeting Point and the Director of Intelligence for Pollen Bridge. Today, I would like to welcome Dr. Rob Hanfield, Executive Director of the Supply Chain Resource Cooperative and the Bank of America University Distinguished Professor of Supply Chain Management. Rob recently co-authored a new book titled The Living Supply Chain, The Evolving Imperative of Operating in Real Time. And that is what he joins me today to discuss. So, Rob, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure, Kelly. It's always a pleasure to join your show.
So I've had the chance to review your book, and I'm going to share a link to that review on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page. But could you just start us off by providing a high-level overview for anyone listening who hasn't read it yet?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So the book came about as a result of some interactions that I had with Tom Linton, who's the Chief Supply Chain Officer at Flex out in which is headquartered out in Milpitas, California. And Tom kept inviting me to come out and visit his pulse center that he calls it. And I went out there and was just literally blown away by what I saw going on in terms of this truly a living supply chain. And I talked to Tom about it. We decided we really got to write a book about this. And the book is divided up into chapters that align with the LIVING acronym that we came up with. The L stands for live. In other words, data is live. The supply chain is alive. Intelligent, in terms of intelligent analytics. Velocity, which is a core theme, as we'll talk about, of the book. Velocity of assets, velocity of information, velocity of action. Interactive, being truly collaborative and data-based in nature. Networked, you know, creating a common view, a common set of relationships that are aligned across multiple tiers of the supply chain. And then the last chapter, G, stands for good, which is our supply chains have to be good. You know, they have to be ethical, they have to be sustainable, and they have to be, considered of human labor rights. So we really use the book as a vehicle for defining some of the changes that are occurring in the future supply chain, in the digital supply chain, with a focus on velocity and visibility as the focal point for exploiting digital, mobile, and cloud-based technologies.
Now, one of the things that really struck me in reading the book is that you don't say, okay, these are trends or these are factors that we're observing in the global economy or in the business environment in general. And so let's talk about how we're going to translate those into supply chain. And maybe it's part of the velocity aspect or the real-time aspect, but it seems to be that there's more of a focus of, okay, here's the big environment that we're all playing in. We don't need to translate it. We need to respond to it directly. And in that, you describe three major shifts that you see as affecting the digital economy. You talk about data being a natural resource, kind of in the spirit of a raw material, converting that data into decisions as being a key refinement process of the digital era. And finally, the idea that cognitive computing or human and machine interaction will be a critical relationship going forward. Why do you, and certainly, you know, bring in maybe some of Tom's firsthand experiences, why do you feel like it's so important for supply chain managers to be responding directly to the digital environment that they exist in instead of coming up with, okay, here's the piece of it that applies to us, and so we're going to create a little microcosm for ourselves to live in?
So I would say that, you know, the issue of data as a resource is really key. Data is at the core of what we can utilize the problem today, I think, is there's so much data and people are overwhelmed. And the second point, this requires a translation capability. We need to be able to quickly access data in a manner that we can use it rapidly for decision making. And, you know, up until the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, data has sort of been operating in a batch mode where we're constantly trying to catch up with what happened. And it's been largely backwards looking. And so increasingly with the evolution of cloud-based computing and mobile computing, we want to be able to see what's happening in our supply chains right away. The idea is, can we get access to the right information at the right time that can allow us to quickly respond to any types of changes? It could be demand changes. It could be disruptions. It could be, changes in technology. It could be changes in supply relationships. It could be, you know, Hurricane Harvey or Irma that are hitting us. And this then requires that we exploit cognitive technologies. And cognitive technologies are able to rapidly look at large amounts of data and recognize patterns, recognize, key issues or events that help us understand what's going on. And we're starting to see some really interesting cognitive technologies that can look at what humans do. They'll follow experts in the supply chain, and they'll watch what they look at, what information they look at, what data they look at in the event of a hurricane or a disaster or a disruption. And they'll learn from that, and they'll understand, oh, these are the things we need to look at that experts look at. So cognitive means that they have to be trained. They have to be trained by experts. And once they're trained, they can help bring that data to bear quickly for managers. But what this also requires is really a different ability to interact with man and machine. So managers need to be able to know what questions to ask. They need to be able to understand how to interact with a cognitive capability in a machine that will produce the data that allows them to interact, make the right decisions, collaborate with others, and quickly assess, you know, what needs to be done and how to move quickly. So all of this is sort of tied in the theme of velocity and visibility, as you can see, because it all sort of, you know, works together in a very organic way.
Now, in the animal kingdom, velocity, I think, in most cases, not being an animal expert myself, comes as a result of instinct, right? So there's this driving survival instinct, preservation of the young, right? There's not a whole lot of analysis that's going on. It's a matter of, here's something in my environment. I am responding to it in such a way that is going to ensure my survival, increase my health, protect my young, and it's an instantaneous decision made based on those circumstances. In the human world, and with our relationships with smart machines, with cognitive computing, I think maybe instead of instinct, it's more a question of trust. What do you think is the progress that we as humans need to make so that all of this real-time data that is increasingly available to us is motivating faster decisions, and we're not throwing away the value of having it in near real time because we say, oh, geez, yeah, I have this amazingly fast available data, but I don't trust it enough to make a fast decision. The data may be more available, but my decision-making process has not necessarily sped up. What can we do to increase our velocity of response?
No, that's a great question. I think it's one that, is really, you know, to be determined, because I think that is one of those questions that you say, how do you get people to trust data? How do you get people to interact with data in a way that allows them to respond to the data much more quickly? As you point out, you know, the natural theme is maybe a clue to it in those facts. And we actually, you know, really emphasize the importance of and the relationship between supply chains and, you know, the natural rules of evolution the natural rules of what's going on in the animal kingdom. And, you know, if you think about evolution, it's not just survival of the fittest, it's survival of those who are best able to adapt. And, you know, I think we have to start thinking in those terms of how do we adapt to an environment that's constantly shifting and changing, and how do we learn to trust that nature of that we, I believe, is, you know, we're natural species as well. And how do we learn to trust in our natural ability to make decisions, to trust the gut, to use the data to inform the gut, but then trust the gut feeling and make that decision. You know, this is where it gets really interesting because, you know, if you look, one of the examples we use in the book is the elephant seal. And the elephant seal, you know, every year they migrate from California to Alaska. And, you know, they know which way to go. And each one takes a different route, but they all end up at the same place. And in a sense, you know, you look at that and you go, well, why can't humans do that? Why can't we, you know, follow some kind of a hidden radar that we know is taking us in that right direction, use data to make better decisions, but then also, you know, rely on that instinct and experience that we have as well. And I think this is where it's really going to become very interesting is we have to learn how to ask machines the right questions. We need to be able to understand, you know, what are the keywords? What are the things we're looking for? But then also have a natural curiosity to kind of dig into the data and understand it more and allow it to be produced visually so that we can get to that that decision. And in a sense, we're really testing hypotheses. We're constantly, you know, taking an educated guess of what we think we should be doing. And if we can find data to quickly support that educated guess, you know, we can make a decision. So it's a combination of reliance on data, but then also sort of instinctual thinking about what we need to be doing or what we need to do. That's very difficult to train people in that. It's something that comes with experience, but I think it's also something that, you know, can be evolved over time as well.
Now, as you get through the book, you end the book in a very interesting place. And so maybe that's sort of a fitting question to end our conversation with. You actually talk a little bit about the future of supply chains. Can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek? How is it that you and Tom sat and pulled together all of what you had observed at Flex and all of the research that you did at the Animal Kingdom? What is it, do you think, that we should be preparing to work with or just plain expect to happen on the horizon of supply chain evolution?
So I think there's several key themes that will likely occur. You know, the first I think we'll see is that this idea of a supply chain is becoming more federated, I think, is really important. And that really means that there's going to have to be a lot more person-to-person relationship development, that the traditional way of, you know, three bids and a cloud of dust, that has to change. And I think we're also going to see that there'll be increased collaboration between salespeople and procurement people that will be driven much more on total cost of ownership-driven relationships, less price-based. And that in turn will yield much more productive, much more smoothly run supply chains. The second piece from a digital perspective, I think we're going to be entering this cognitive era where, as I said, people will have to learn how to interact with machines, where you can be asking, you know, computer, tell me, you know, which way am I headed? And I'm headed in this direction and almost like a Waze type of application. And the computer can guide you in terms of procurement, in terms of suppliers, in terms of risk. You can ask it any type of question, but the ability to ask the right questions will become much more important. One of the interesting books that I read is Deep Blue recently, and it talks about the fact that computers are really limited in terms of what they can do. and they really require humans to feed them the right questions and the right issues. So I think that ability to interact much more in a voice-driven approach will become important. I think we're likely to see a complete open market when it comes to transportation with the rise of e-commerce. I think we'll be able to also have the Uberization of different industries like freight and transportation, where you'll have a box and you'll say, I need to ship this box to California. And, voice recognition will go out there. It'll find a provider. And very much like the elephant seal, it'll make its way to California using a variety of providers that are willing to act independently but collaboratively to get that package there. I think that's a future event, and especially when you move to driverless vehicles. And finally, I've got to say a word about blockchain. I'm really excited about blockchain. I know there's a lot of hype around it right now, but I think that is a technology that's going to evolve very quickly. And I think that will have a major effect, particularly on security, on product serialization, on building greater trust between parties in the supply chain. And at some point, you may go to the food store, you may buy an article of clothing and scan it on your iPhone, and it'll tell you where that product was produced. Was it produced in ethical factories? Is it from where it claims to be from? And that can be secured a lot more by blockchain. So the consumer will have greater trust in the product and the origin of that product as well, which will really keep organizations more accountable and more transparent. And I think that's where we're all headed sometime in the next 5 to 10 years.
So for anyone that is interested, The Living Supply Chain, a book that I highly recommend reading, is available for purchase on Amazon or directly from Wiley, the publisher. Rob, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your thoughts and insights on The Living Supply Chain.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's been a pleasure. You have a great day.
And thank you as well to everyone who has joined us for this BMP Radio podcast. Please feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information. And please enjoy the rest of your day.